Okay, it's going.
Can you begin by telling me your name and where you were born?
Pearl Wong and Gwynrod, B.C.
And when did your family come to Vancouver or the Vancouver area?
Oh, well, I was in about 1931.
And what reasons did you come down to the city?
Well, my father came down for work.
Okay. And did you work at all during the Depression?
No. Just shortly after 1944, I started working.
And what was your first job like?
Nothing. It really didn't go nowhere. It was a job just learning how to be a waitress.
What kind of conditions were there? What kind of work did you do?
Everything. It was horrible. Really deplorable. I think we didn't get about $5 a week. And the one job I worked, $10 a month. They were really awful. I sure had to eat a lot of hotcakes. My first job was cooking.
So did you work like 10-hour days?
Yes. Yeah. 40, no coffee breaks. Definitely no coffee break. Half hour. But you had a chance to learn. It was hard, but you learned something.
And where did you move from there in terms of work? What was your next job?
Well, I stayed mostly, when I went to work, I stayed long periods of time. The place I learned was 5 years, the King Ed Cafe in New Westminster. And then I went from there into Vancouver, but I stayed just a short period because I got married and I was pregnant. And then I came back and I worked at the Fraser, and I've been there since 1955.
When you had been trained, did your conditions and your wages get better?
Conditions a little, like only give you authority, but it didn't give you any more money with it. Mm-hmm. Actually, they got extra work out of you, but they handled you a free title.
Right.
That's all.
And when did you get involved in the union?
When they negotiated a contract for 2 cents. And I said it was the last contract we'd ever get for 2 cents, and it was. They went up to a nickel.
So were you working in a union place?
Yes, 100% union, and you had to join the union. It was a closed shop.
Where was that?
At the Fraser Cafe.
When had they been organized?
I think several years before, the girl, Kitty, she worked at the PV afterwards. Unfortunately, she lost her job for organizing it. They found ways of getting rid of her. But that happened, I think, to everybody in the early, you know, the early times of restaurants. They just didn't keep you around.
Right. And so she had organized that place?
Yes.
Laid off. Yeah. The union stayed in?
Oh yes, it still is. In fact, as of today, it's the only really complete organized house on Columbia Street in New Westminster. The rest still have their charters up, but I don't think they paid dues or anything. It's really a sticky situation.
And for what reasons did you get involved in the union, other than?
Well, for me, it was that I had to join. And if I had to join, I might just as well get something out of it, because I wasn't going to settle for 2 cents the next year. And we had a lot of things that had to be worked out, especially with regard to women, you know, and their fringe benefits and coffee breaks and you know, sickness, get it a little relaxed time. You know, every month the girl had a problem, more or less. And there was a lot of conditions of sleeping with the boss, mostly, you know.
Was there sort of sexual pressure?
Yeah, really was. And, not so much in my place. Then I wasn't just representing my place. I was representing, you know, trying to represent a lot of the girls who, because I was in it, came to me with their problems. Mm-hmm. And we felt that if this was a condition, we really didn't need it. But if the girl wanted to go to the bed, that was her privilege. But she didn't want to be bugged about 8 hours a day over it, you know. And they really came, and they had the strength for that pitch, you know.
Did they have to strike against that?
No, they never striked against it. I think in time it worked out. As things got better, the girls got wiser and stronger, and they dodged the issue a lot more intelligently. And the management finally woke up and said, well, you know, we're not going to be able to use this for a leverage.
Right. How did people deal with it as an issue? Because I know this is something that the BC Fed's trying to deal with now.
Is it?
Sexual harassment.
Oh. Well, my point is that if a girl makes it very plain and very clear, it's up to the individual. And I mean, a boss isn't going to harass somebody unless she wants to be harassed. And first of all, women think that, you know, they like to be fed their ego trips too. But if you say, well, look at this, I'm here for a job, do you want me? And that's it, all you're going to get, they'll leave you alone. There's no problem. You may get one boss that's a little kooky, but really no problem. You can handle it.
Right.
And if you can't, well, then you just tell your fellow workers and they'll help you out too, you know. It all depends on how serious and how strong they are. I mean, to say one thing and do another is another thing. But if you really mean it, there's no problem in solving that problem.
So the union was able to
back
people up?
Yeah, they were. That's if they knew about the issue, eh? And if you had, well, like, one woman in there, well, they were the feed to the union. And I mean, the union didn't know what to do for anybody if they didn't tell them, eh? The only thing I regret they ever had was the coffee break, because they take advantage of it, even to this day. It's got to the point where people used to appreciate the coffee break as a rest, but now it's a way of life. They can't work 2 hours without a break. That's the only thing I feel sorry for that I helped negotiate was the coffee break. Because the people nowadays, they just don't appreciate. They join a union nowadays because they have to join. It's a closed house. They don't care what, they don't go out to put themselves out to find out what they can do. They expect you to do everything for them.
What other issues concerning women came up?
We finally got our holidays, you know, like statutory holidays, which was a good thing. And then we got to recognize whenever we had to work on a stat holiday through the governments and through the unions fighting, you know, and we got paid extra. And I feel that it is a very big issue right now because, you know, 2.5 times your wages is quite a bit of money. But then if you have to work like in our industry all the time, you certainly deserve it. But it means that practically, if any hotel or anybody says that they make money on that day, they don't. That's why most of them close up and rather pay a straight 8 hours pay because they're losing so much. But it is a good thing for the staff to have, and they should have it. You know, they work for it all year, like at Christmas time in our place. At Christmas time, there's no other cafe really open, and we have to help the senior citizens so much, you know. But they deserve every bit they get, really.
Right.
Yeah.
Was there mostly women who worked in restaurants?
Yeah. At that time, now, in time, there was men, but maybe just one man, a waiter, or always male cooks, where now in the restaurant that I manage now is all women. And my chef is only 27 years old.
And it's a woman.
And the second one in command is a woman, too.
Did the issue of equal pay for equal work come up?
No, but my boss does discriminate, myself, even against myself. Like, I'm management as of 5 years ago. Now, if I went in and said to him something that should be done, he listens to me and tolerates it. Say, oh, well, she's gone away again, you know, we bury her for a while. But if a man went in and said to him, now, this is the way it should be run, he'd do it without any hesitation. He feels that a woman who goes out to work is working for a second paycheck. And it's really, she doesn't need that. She isn't qualified that much as a man. As a man, she'll get more.
Did you run into that a lot in the industry and organizing?
No. For me, I've only been up because I've been in this one place 24 years. You know, it'll be 25 years next year. So when I was just working as a waitress and I was the shop steward for about 15 years, I had no problem because I got the rest. But as a management, yes, I've run into this problem. Mm-hmm. I still am. Mm-hmm.
Did the union try and do anything about the question of equal pay in terms of dealing with that kind of discrimination?
Well, of course, they can't do nothing for me unless we form a union for managements, you know, because there's just nothing that they can do. You're more or less guaranteed to work it out yourself. Definitely. Oh, yes. Yeah. I remember one time I worked, you know, we had a... Oh, it was a centennial jubilee thing here. My boss isn't here now that did it to me, but I worked 8 hours at whatever the time and a half or whatever it was that time. And then I had to go back and work another 8 hours. Now, that should have been what I classified double time. Well, he said he couldn't pay me double time because the union was going to get mad at him. And it turned out I'd worked 16 hours. So that was one of the incidents that I had run into. But I did eventually get my money.
What kind of grievances would come up?
Strangely enough, I only had one grievance against management. And the reason I only had one was that it has to be put in writing. And nobody, they'll grieve, but they won't sign a statement. So therefore, you have very little to act on. But I only had one, and it was over the girls and their hours. And we settled it. I had two, actually, but we settled that one, and the girl won. But the next time, I got fired. The boss and I got into such a fight, and the owner, my boss as of now, he said, well, stay away from me, like, meaning my boss. And it ended up I tried strangling him. And, of course, he's no longer there. The girls were going to walk out. They gave him a week, and he left. And that's when I went back. I was running for a head office against Ed Carlson at the time, and I lost the election, had no job. And then they came and they told me to come back to work, and I went back with full seniority. But
and this was, this fight was over a union issue?
Oh, over a union issue, yes.
What was it?
Well, at that time the boss used to drink quite a bit, and he used to get on the girls. He used to pick on them. He'd come in and be drinking, you know, and he really didn't know what he was talking about. That's how him and I got in the fight. If he stayed away from me and left me alone, but he kept, and I guess I, after so long a period of time, I just blew, and I did. I really went to.
Should I
pour the tea? Yes. Get the job done for him, not his man.
How did the closed shop help to resolve?
Well, with a closed shop, it resolved all problems of joining a union. You must join a union. You have 30 days to do it. And then you don't have not the friction. I mean, with everybody, some that would never want to join a union, especially Europeans that came to this country. They'd had unions over there years before we ever did here. And some of them lost their jobs through fighting for it. Mm-hmm. So they really didn't want to have nothing to do with it ever again. And of course they realized that if they wanted the job there, they must rejoin a union. Mm-hmm. But they never really came too active, not in the women's part. They'd sit back and watch a lot, but not say too much.
When you became active in the union, how many restaurants or cafes were organized?
In Westminster, I would say no more than six, and that would be totally Columbia Street, because it was just the Pacific and the King Ed, the R&R, the Royal City, and the Fraser Cafe. And of that six today, I think just our place, maybe part of the Cafe of the Pacific, I'm not sure anymore of that even. And the rest of more or less worked themselves out or changed companies and gone family units.
Yeah, what's happened? Why have the certification?
Dropped? Well, because of the contracts, they're so large now. They have to pay so much. A girl in my place, just a waitress, gets $5 an hour. Mm-hmm. And with her hidden cost, it would be about $5.40. That's just a waitress, and the dishwasher gets more. And in fact, it's so bad that I can't hire a busboy anymore because the busboy gets more than the waitress does. Mm-hmm. That's how bad. You know, when you look, $5 doesn't sound like much, but it is in our industry when it's coming off a Columbia Street that Westminster is dead right now and all the business has gone up to town, up 6th Street and stuff like that. And you're just getting working people that's coming in. And until later they get rapid transit or something and change that area, which they're planning to do. You know, it takes, and they're very slow, like they're supposed to build that Douglas College and stuff like that. But you may get a bit of business, you know, from the construction people and that. But it's slow. You're relying on what comes through your door and your trade and your business and your what you've done to build up your business. That's what you're relying on.
Mm-hmm. So it's hard then to meet the
That's why it's a competitive business. It keeps you very well on. We're lucky because we're the oldest one there. We've been there about 68 years and we're going on a name, eh? And we can have good food in that. And we're like we're the last of the family restaurant, if you know what I mean. Everybody comes there, is a customer for years and years and years, and they don't leave us till they die. And, you know, their pain is our pain sort of thing, mm-hmm. You know. And it's a good reputation to have.
Is that a part of the industry? What kind of workers do you need? What kind of worker do you need to be to really be a good waitress?
Somebody that cares. More than for their paycheck. I mean, a paycheck, you sure, that's nice. But if you're going to get somebody watched, like I said, for the coffee break, you have your half hour, and then 2 hours later, may I go for my coffee break? That's not a person that cares. Because eventually you're going to get that coffee break. You don't get it today, you'll get it tomorrow, but you're going to make sure you get double, you know. And the management feels better. But when you have somebody riding you all the time and says, well, can I go, can I go? And you know that they're not going to make it to the next plateau until they have that 10 minutes, which they stretch to 20. That's not a person that's really cares, you know. They really, really don't.
And is it a question of rapport with the customers?
Yes, she must have it. They must be a restaurant and a good restaurant girl. She must make that person feel like he's in her own home, in her own living room. That is the name of it. If you can put yourself across and project yourself, that you're entertaining somebody in your own home, you're going to be a top waitress because you're going to care. I mean, you care about how your guests feel in your house, so therefore you'll care when he comes into your place of business.
Did the union provide any training for waitresses?
No, at the time they didn't, but later on in years, yes, they had seminars for them to go to, and I believe there's training schools that they set up. I know there is for camp workers and stuff like that, but I don't know if it ever went as far as for waitresses, I imagine. You could go to a waitress school in Vancouver Vocational, I think, and they, I don't know about that one in Vancouver, you know, the BCIT, is it?
Right.
I think maybe they even had a training program. I often thought of opening up one. You know, just to teach them, like, to come to work with the shoelaces. Like, they don't think they'll come in and their shoes may be white, but they never put new, fresh shoelaces in. And I have to go and say, no, you'll buy six pairs of shoelaces or five pair and keep them out of that. I said, this is what I did when I wore whites. You know. And, of course, for me, I secretly always wanted to be a nurse, eh? So naturally, if you wore a white uniform, you came with that thought, well, I want to be as clean and as neat as possible because it paid off in the pocketbook. Tips are good. Mm. You know.
How did the union deal with the question of tipping? Was that when you were trying to figure out wage levels, did you take tips?
Oh, management, of course, we never discussed the tip. It was never recognized. And why should it be? Not in negotiations. I mean, management was always there saying, well, they get this or they get this gratuity. That girl worked for that gratuity and it had nothing to do with this. The tips nowadays are people have recognized the tip. And I find it a thing that's maybe not a very healthy thing, because where I work, they're all married women or either broken up with their homes, and they're out. It's not a second paycheck that is a luxury, it's a necessity. For instance, I have one girl right now, she lived 3 years with this man, taking his name and everything, but never married. Now, he doesn't want her. She established no credit in her own name because she was using his name. She has no legal rights, and she's just scratching for rent. Well, naturally, those tips. And there seems to be a lot of, everybody's out for the, they know which customer's going to tip, pay, so they want that tip. It makes them miserable, really do. In fact, I thought sometimes of destroying the tip and saying, put no signs up, no tipping, please. But my dining room girls make sometimes $50 a night in tips. So if they make $5 a day and wait an hour, you know that they're taking home a pretty good paycheck.
Yeah. Did you find generally that people who worked in the industry, worked in the restaurants, got along with each other?
Yes. And no, I wouldn't say maybe all places, but in my place, yes. We're like a family. We're committed to one another. If one's sick, we all be, you know, and we try to solve it. But not every restaurant is like that, I'm afraid, you know.
How did that kind of atmosphere get constructed, that kind of support?
I think with a lot of trust and respect. Like when the boss fired me, for instance, it was my girls gave the owner one that they were all going to walk out at noon on a said Friday, eh? And unless they brought me back. And he said, well, give me 1 week and I'll have it settled. Well, the manager was no longer there. Now, they didn't bring me and his manager there. They brought in another man, and he lasted 1 year. And then they asked me after that to take over being management. But I went back to my status as before as a head waitress, mm-hmm. You know. And the masters, if they decide to move, which is very seldom, they can get something done.
Mm-hmm. Were you working once you were married?
Oh, yes, all through. I had... six children. The last one I was just a month old when I went back to work. And I worked up until she was 7 months. I couldn't get behind the counter anymore. All the way through, really.
What did you do for childcare? Because that's a real problem. Well,
it was, but I was fortunate enough to have my mother, and she looked after her. So I was quite safe in being able to go out to work. But there, again, was a necessity. I had to work, too. It wasn't I was doing it for pleasure, wanted to. I must have to work, you know.
So how did you handle doing your housework and shifts in terms of your kids?
That was easy. My mother and I lived together mm-hmm. in the neighborhood of 40 years. And two women can't run one home. I work, she ran the home. And on my days off, well, I do some of the housework and stuff like that. If I wasn't at a union meeting. Mm.
And do you remember the other women you worked with, whether that was a problem that came up?
Oh, yes. Still is with some. And they either hire a babysitter, most of them, or sometimes if they're still living with their husband, the husband pitched in. Not so much now. They seem to be older women are coming in, you know, with older children, so that they're in the 13th or 14th. But before, the husbands used to stay home and help. You know, they'd work one shift and opposite to their husband, and then he could babysit too.
Talk about childcare as an issue?
No, not really, no, not in our union, in the other unions, you know, down at the level of, say, the Labor Council level, stuff like that. But not too much in us, because it was a pretty big issue, and it would only fall on deaf ears anyway, you know.
Were you present for any of the Labor Council?
Oh, yes, I was on the Vancouver Labor Council, I don't know how many years, they'd have to check my record, in the Westminster Labor Council for a couple of years, too.
What kind of debates went on in the Labour Council?
Oh, everything.
Women's issues, like childcare, yeah. Maternity leave, equal pay, that kind of
thing. Well, not so much that. I can truthfully say that in the Labour Council, I sat and watched the communists take over.
Oh.
Labor, you know, in the Vancouver Labour Council.
Do you want to describe that for us?
Well, I remember Sid Thompson spoke very, you know, very dramatic, and Bill Black, of course he wasn't a communist, but he, Bill Stewart was. And he never tried to hide it, his you know. But he was a well-formed person. And they never take an issue unless they're the best at speaking on it. They don't need a microphone. And very dramatic, you know. And it just, that they seemed to win all the points. And the rest of us just sat there like dummies. You know, really, we'd get a few points up, but then the people that were of knowledge transferred to a higher position, so they were no longer connected with the Labour Council, and therefore the people that came in didn't have no knowledge, so they were like little lambs being led to the slaughter, you know, they just followed. And then we'd say, well, that must be agreeable, until somebody said, well, look at his affiliation is to the left. Oh, you know, but it was too late then, because they had formed an opinion, and he was the strongest speaker. And this went on time after time after time.
Mm. Was that through the 1950s?
Yes, sure. Because that's when I became active in 54 and all the way up into the 60s. And that, you know. We used to go there and sit there and just, it used to make me so mad. Like, they threw me in to run one time, the plumbers did, against the communists. I think we met twice a month, and I was at that time very interested. So I had to come all the way from Westminster to Vancouver, which are local. Sometimes the BA took us over, otherwise I had to take a bus, eh? Well, they didn't even know my name. They knew I was the redhead that sat in that seat, but they couldn't tell you my name. But anyway, I lost. It was for being a hospitality or a hostess or something like that, to work out of the Fed, or, you know, but they didn't. They wanted somebody else in there. And so anyway, they threw me in. But the man won.
No.
I think, well, like I said, the one who would have won anything would have been Josephine Halleck. Out of nothing else, because she was there, and she was much older than I was, and they respected her, you know, and knew her too.
Was it a problem for women to gain the respect or get the respect they deserved from male trade unions?
Yes, it was.
Maybe
for me it was a little easier. Maybe it'd even be harder nowadays, because nowadays you must become in with knowledge, not like before. They respected me because there were so few of us. I think one thing, there was only three of us women sitting there. You know, one again was Josephine, the other lady was from the fruit growers up in the Okanagan. She was there, or a garment worker lady, because in garment workers there was always women.
Mm-hmm.
And there was very, very few, and then I came in with the hotel end.
Did the women who were on Labor Council or at Fed conventions give each other support? Did they support?
Not really. They probably would, they try to, but it didn't go anywhere. If a man said, well, look at, well, they'd say, how high, you know. Because the women weren't interested. And they really, I don't think they are today. They, like I said, they only cared for what you could do for them, not what they could do for the union, you know. They paid to join the union, and that's as far as it went. The only time they ever come, is for maybe negotiating over a contract and wanting more money. But in my own union right now, where we used to meet once a month, and they're now meeting once every 3 months, and they can't even get a quorum to hold a meeting. So that goes to show you, and we have merged with the, like we were just local 835, it's now all of Vancouver, Westminster, And you mean to tell me out of all of that that they couldn't get more than 26 people? And with all your, that's not counting your all your executive board that has to attend. Mm. That's how bad it is.
When you worked in that restaurant industry as a waitress, were there different racial groups or ethnic groups
mm-hmm.
that you worked with?
Yes. Well,
how did that work out in terms of union involvement, and also was there ever tension around?
No, none whatsoever. I mean, you set the Chinese, because Chinese were always in the foregrounds of being cooks and that. And then the Ukrainians came in. Well, I had a Ukrainian boss, so he brought his nationality with him. And then the Chinese hung on just as well as anybody else. No, I can truly say I have worked in restaurants, yes, where that was only with Greeks. You know, the Greeks stick together too. But that issue is only brought up if somebody chooses to bring it up.
Yeah.
You know. Maybe in longshoring, maybe, or in any in heavy industry, where somebody didn't like it, or where somebody had to pay the supervisor or the foreman for a job. Now, that you'd run into that situation.
Contract labor.
Yeah. Though I must say, right now, if we were going to have a discussion on ethnic groups and the ones that are resented, yes, there is the East Indian. You know, they call them Punjabs, I think. I have three dishwashers, but people resent them terribly. And the reason is that they can pull together and save the money like we used to, and they get ahead.
Right, it's differences in values.
That's right. That's right.
Okay. Well, the women who worked in the industry, were they mostly single or married or younger or older? Is there any kind of...
As years ago, mm-hmm. they were either... some were married, but they were mostly single girls. Older women, widowed, or never had been married. A lot never used to get married. But they were mostly married women. Like even today, it could be a prejudice, I don't know, but I don't hire young girls. For the simple reason is, I'm tired of training and then losing them. Or two, if I have them, then they draw flies like they draw all the young boys. And you got them sitting there for 3 hours for a cup of coffee. So I found even if I take one girl, I've really got to mother her to make sure that I don't get that element. You know, and especially if she's good looking. Like I used to help a lot of girls going to college, just want the summer thing, you know. And then it got to the business where I used to have three girls in summer relief, I'm down to one. That's how the business has shifted.
Mm.
You know, so that tells you something right there.
Did you tend to live in the same community where we
were? Yes, right in Westminster. It's just till last year when I bought this out here, but then we were just on the neighbor, the border of it.
Yeah. When you became involved in the union, how did that affect your work and your working conditions and the way your boss dealt with you?
He was glad I did it because he figured he owned me so much that I wouldn't be no hassle to him, you know. But it didn't work out that way. But like I said, I never had any problems because when the girl decided she was going to have a problem, she came to me first. I either settled it with him or I don't think once I had to bring the union down.
What was that over?
Oh, it was so long ago. It was about 15 years ago. I couldn't remember. But it was over a girl in some situation, I think. It was probably money, because that's about the worst thing he ever did. He was always cheating on his money, you know. There again, I didn't have the hassle because, like I said, when a girl had a complaint, they must sign it. You don't act on it until it's signed. And nobody put it in writing because they feel the repercussion after it was settled, no matter who won, she figured the boss would be after her anyway. And at that time, he quite possibly would have been.
And how did your union involvement affect the way other workers related to you? Were they really excited?
Oh, yes, very happy for me and give me all the assistance I needed. And so did the bartenders, you know.
What kind of things did they do to
you? Well, they give you a lot of encouragement, especially if you got down. But you see, again, I ran a very closed house. And if there was any problem, I got it right to it fast because I worked there, right? I didn't have to send out for somebody. I was there when it was happening. And so you don't let it get that big in the first place. But because women weren't involved, I got a lot of longshoremen, older men, would give me the encouragement of other locals.
Mm-hmm.
you know, because they think that's pretty wonderful that somebody cared now, you know. And then to get the education, because I was never in I only went to grade four. Mm-hmm. So it was twice as hard for somebody to have to work, you know, and you had to be very sure what you were reading. So it used to be that somebody would help me out, or I'd have a friend, you know, that was interested and worked up in it. But my own union used me, because I was the only woman. They'd say, well, we'll send her to, as a delegate, because she can't do no harm. Or if they tell us to vote, if I tell them, like, say, well, they say, well, you're going to vote this way. Well, that's where they were wrong. That's what how I got the name The Rebel, because I never voted for a slate. I voted for the one I thought was going to depart, you know, some good for somebody. And then when they found out, they weren't too happy, but they got used to it.
What kind of issues was it that you would be rebellious around?
Well, yeah, if I didn't particularly like a person, and I still believe this today, too, and I didn't truthfully think the man could do the job, he just didn't get my vote. It was simple, why should I vote? Because somebody else said, well, he's the one we want in. That didn't make any sense to me when I knew that he couldn't do the job in the first place. It's like when I ran, and they said, well, of course not everybody knew my education background, eh? And they said, well, you're not qualified. I said, I'm as qualified as the person that's in that job now, because he didn't know nothing now. Then, and he still doesn't. But they seem to forget there's people that do know. Those are the people you hire to back you up, you know. I'd get myself a good secretary and a good lawyer. That's all I needed. The one to defy something that the contracts had to be wrote up, they'd have to be. But then you just don't get any lawyer, you get a labor lawyer, you know. And you get a good legal secretary that knows how to interpret it for you. And if you can talk to people, that's the main thing. It's not bullying yourself or pushing yourself. You've got to sit down, and if you see a man, another man, or an employer, whoever, you get down the nitty gritty with him, and he'll respect you if you've got something to say. And he'll let him listen, and then he'll listen to you too. When you go in there, like you get a whole bunch of them and say, well, and they get the media behind them now, which is a bad mistake, because the media only says what they want to say. It's never half the truth in any way. And then they get all this going before to sell papers. And the animosity is already laid before you even get to the bargaining table. I did an awful lot of bargaining. I liked that the best part of the union. Of any of my union work was bargaining for wages.
Oh, yeah?
Working conditions. I found that the most stimulating because it was challenging. There you're dealing right with the right person, the employer. Naturally, he's not going to give up everything easily. It's going to cost him every time he gives you something. But if you recognize and you sit down with a little bit of respect for one another, you can come up. One.